Today's program is brought to you by Nettle Meadow Farm Cheese and Spirits Pairing, taking place on Saturday, June 18th at Nettle Meadow Farm. For more information, visit NettleMeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com. That's N-E-T-T-L-E, MeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com.
Hi, I'm Reggie Watts, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Episode 173 of The Morning After. I am your host, Sari Kamen.
I'm your other host, Leslie Stockton.
Hi, Leslie.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey. We have two awesome guests in the studio today. They're going to be talking about the same thing. First, we have managing partner of Huertas Restaurant in the East Village, Nate Adler. Hi, Nate.
Hey.
Hey. And we also have founder and owner of Maiden Lane Restaurant in the East Village, Niles Fallon. Hey, Niles.
Hey.
And they're here to talk about the Eastville Restaurant Collective. But first,
food news.
Food news. Food news.
That's crazy.
No, not yet, Nate.
Okay, sorry.
That's his line, but he jumped.
It's down. About to pop off, but not right now.
Okay. Okay, first story. There is a Canadian brewery brewing something up. I just made that up.
Uh-huh.
Brewery brewing something up. Thank you.
That's good.
Okay, and that thing is that they are actually trying to deliver beer via Bald Eagle. This is when you say that.
No.
My last name means eagle, actually, in German.
That's crazy.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, so this is something that they're actually trying. It's not a joke.
Stop. Wait, Canadian.
Canadian?
Bald Eagle.
Bald Eagle beer delivery.
Drone delivery system.
Via Bald Eagle. They have they're called the Phillips Brewing and Malting Company. They're in Victoria, BC. And they have a new product. It's a Pilsner. And to just kind of spice things up, they don't want to do it, you know, the same old way as every other delivery beer service. They are going to try and launch their new beer via a Bald Eagle.
I just don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either. But they made a little video. It's online. You can watch it. It's kind of like showing you what they have in mind. They've built like a tower out of beer, and at the top they put some raw meat. And the idea is that all the beers are tied together, and then they're going to get a Bald Eagle to come to the raw meat. And
all I can say is best of luck.
That's how I feel. Good luck, Canada.
That's like if the Brooklyn Brewery got pigeons to deliver their beer.
That's exactly what it is.
But I think there's so many more pigeons, and it would be much more successful. I think pigeons are actually trainable, though.
But
whereas bald eagles
are they not? Has anyone ever tried?
Wild ass birds.
They are wild AF. All right. Well, we're gonna keep an eye out.
Yeah,
we're gonna let you know how it goes. We're gonna keep an eye out on that one.
If they could send one over to the Heritage Radio recording studios for us,
bonus points.
And we will Facebook Live that video.
Yes.
Everybody
wins. We will
tweet
about it.
Everybody wins.
Everyone wins. I like that. So if you're listening, Bald Eagle,
caca!
Thank you, Niles.
Thanks.
Or was that a Bald Eagle? I don't know. Okay, moving on to Japan.
Always Japan.
Last week.
What's new in Japan?
I'll tell you what's new, Leslie. McDonald's is going full on Willy Wonka. They are giving away golden fries. So they have a contest that's happening. So you guys remember in Willy Wonka when it was like they were trying to find the golden chocolate bar and they were like, I got a golden ticket. Okay, so they're doing a similar thing. So there's a lottery that's going to happen. And in order to enter the lottery to then possibly potentially win the golden fries, you have to take a picture of something that kind of looks like fries, and then there's an app you download, and I think you have to be in Japan to make this happen, mm-hmm. of like a picture of like the, you know, like the red McDonald's fry basket. And so then you can take a picture of something that might look like fries and put it in the like the cartoon fry basket, and then hashtag, what do you have to hashtag? You have to hashtag something like golden fry in Japanese, and then you will potentially be entered to win these golden fries.
All I want is to see this feed of all of these.
It's really
things.
It's
that
really
are
kind
going
of good. I look at it.
No one has whimsy down pat like the Japanese.
Yeah,
do.
Someone did like a bunch of bananas, and they kind of looked like fries.
Well, and then like you know, you could get you know, you could Photoshop a bunch of like you know kids and like put them in the fry basket.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
I have ideas for days for this
Yeah,
one.
They just did, like Pokemons and stuff, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so no one knows anything about the golden fries. Like, how many are they? Are they real gold?
Are they gilded?
Are they gilded? Are like, they when edible? Is this going to happen? But Japan is losing its mind.
Huh. And what? And wait, what do they get?
Niles and Nate are like, I don't like this story.
What do they get though?
They get golden fries.
So do they get
like fries made out of gold?
Solid gold French fry sculpture.
Maybe. I'd rather have real fries. What about you guys?
Oh no.
Depends on how many fries you can get with
right,
a golden
yeah.
one.
Yeah, and like, I guess you can sell it. Because what like do you do with the golden fry sculpture?
I'd like to sell it.
You might only be able to use the golden fries to purchase more fries.
I did not think of that.
Mm-hmm. Lifetime.
That wouldn't be so bad.
Wouldn't be the worst. Okay, finally, everyone's favorite chef, Tom Brady of the New England Patriots, is releasing a cookbook. Or did release a cookbook.
What?
And it's only $200.
Only?
Yeah.
Okay, do we have some examples of recipes that he has put in his cookbook? Was there a ghostwriter? Is Giselle anywhere
okay,
there?
Okay, calm down, Lily.
Okay, I'm
That's
sorry.
That's a lot of
I have
questions.
So many questions. I've had a lot of coffee.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know if there's a ghostwriter, but I do know that it's $200 because it's like the cover is bound out of wood, and then it comes like with those ringers, like those spiral ringers, like for a notebook that you can like snap open and snap shut, because potentially they might have some more recipes coming in the future.
Like binder rings.
Okay. With a like a wooden cover. So it's like a wooden binder.
Actual wood or are
real
we talking
wood.
About faux bois?
No. No fake shit here. This is $200 bills.
That's right. Well, I mean, if I'm going to pay $200.
You're paying for the wood, let's be honest.
That shit better be made out of some underinflated football, okay? If that's for $200. Tom Brady throwing shade.
That's an inside joke between
Not
you
that
and Tom
inside.
Brady. And, okay, so Tom Brady, it's actually like he's calling it the TB12 Nutrition Manual, which is the sexiest cookbook title I have ever heard. And it tells you how to be like an amazing human, like both him and his wife, Giselle, because they don't eat any food that has gluten, dairy, sugar, caffeine, or nightshade vegetables in it.
Oh, I hate that nightshade.
Maybe you could
movement.
Use some of these for your restaurants, you guys. What do you think?
What's a nightshade vegetable?
Tomatoes, potatoes, strawberries.
Mushrooms.
Mushrooms are night... No, they're not.
Well, I didn't think so either, but this article says mushrooms. There's no mushrooms in this.
Well...
I think this article's wrong.
Mushrooms are not a nightshade.
I think that's
agree.
A personal preference.
Yep, and no eggplant. So no
eggplant
tomatoes.
Eggplant is a nightshade.
Eggplants... or any other thing that tastes good. One of the recipes is sweet potato gnocchi with escarole and avocado ice cream.
Oh.
Ugh.
Why?
I don't know. Why does Tom Brady have a cookbook deal and I don't? Like, why?
Seriously.
I mean, the Eastville Collective, we're trying to get enough money together to actually front Tom Brady's restaurant.
Cool.
So,
I can't wait to hear... All about that. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Eastville Restaurant Collective and Tom Brady's pop-up restaurant.
Nettle Meadow Farm Cheese and Spirits Pairing is a celebration of good food and beverages in the newly restored Barn Loft event venue at Nettle Meadow Farm in Thurman, New York. On Saturday, June 18th, come sample and savor, then buy your favorite cheeses and beverages to take home. Nettle Meadow cheeses have been praised highly in national media and have won prestigious awards from the American Cheese Society. Taste samples of goat and sheep cheeses paired with an array of local regional wines, beers, and ciders. You'll never forget your first sample of rich, creamy Kunik, Nettle Meadow's trademark cheese. In Esquire, our very own Ann Saxelby said, Kunik, it may very well be the sexiest cheese in the USA. Nettle Meadow Farm is a goat and sheep dairy and cheese company in Thurman, New York, just below Crane Mountain in the Adirondacks, between Gore Mountain, North Creek, and Warrensburg. It's owned and operated by Lorraine Limbiase and Sheila Flanagan. Both have a great love of animals, artisan cheese, and the unique challenges of farm life. Nettle Meadow Farm was originally founded in 1990, and it's the home of over 300 goats, dozens of sheep, and a variety of farm sanctuary animals. Again, the cheese and spirits pairing is Saturday, June 18th. For more information and tickets, visit NettleMeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com. That's N-E-T-T-L-E, MeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com.
Nate Adler is the general manager, beverage director, and partner of Huertas, a Basque restaurant and Pinchos bar in the East Village. Niles Fallon is the co-owner and operator of Maiden Lane, America's first tin seafood bar also in the East Village. Both Nate and Niles are members of the Eastville Restaurant Collective, which is what they're here to talk about today. Welcome to the show, Nate and Niles.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for coming in. First question, what is the Eastville Restaurant Collective?
So the Eastville Restaurant Collective is a group of restaurants and bars in the East Village that all share a like-minded approach to dining and hospitality that are coming together to better business in the neighborhood.
So we are working towards, like Nate said, better business practices, but also to sort of help mold the identity of the East Village hospitality in terms of creating a more sort of sophisticated and welcoming and sort of dining destination for those in the neighborhood as well as other people from other neighborhoods. And we just sort of kicked it off this past month. We had a great event at Huertas a couple nights ago. And right now there's seven of us involved, Pouring Ribbons, Huertas, Maiden Lane, the Eddie,
GG's.
GG's.
And
Virginia's.
Narita.
And Narita.
And Virginia.
Those are good places.
Yeah,
and we've all been operating in the neighborhood now for a few years. All of us are actually under 5 years old.
Correct.
And have been dealing with the same ups and downs, the same flows, the same diners in the neighborhood, and realizing that if we can sort of band together and help each other out and attract people to stay in the hood and come in from other neighborhoods around the city, that we're going to have more success and more ability to promote our philosophies on hospitality and really define what dining in the East Village means today, because that neighborhood has evolved a lot over the course of time, and it's sort of known for amazing ethnic food and sort of that grit and you know, a lot of dive bars, a lot of places to go out and drink. But at the end of the day, we are all quite ambitious restaurants and awesome operators, and we know how to show people unprecedented hospitality, and we want to be able to show the rest of New York City what the East Village is all about in that regard.
Cool. Was there like a specific incident, or just like what was the impetus for starting off?
Well, a lot of us, I mean, like Nate said, we're all around the similar age in terms of the restaurant, and also similar age in terms of our own lives, that most of us live in the neighborhood, and so we frequent each other's businesses as regulars or and that type of thing. So there was already a loose community that existed amongst most of us, and so, you know, approaching each other with this idea, I think initially came out of just knowing that we had similar problems, whether it's needing a cook or whether it's borrowing a kitchen tool for an event, or whether it's, you know, hey, what lawyer are you guys using? What accountant are you guys using? So sort of those just more fundamental day-to-day things. And I think initially we thought maybe this would just be a great way to have a resource for each other. But in our conversations, we realized that we have so much more of a idea of what we want the neighborhood to be and how we think about the neighborhood and the direction we would like sort of businesses to go in the neighborhood, that it really, you know, was pretty natural just coming together as a group in that way. And I think, you know, over time, it'll also grow as a group. There's a lot more restaurants that and bars that we would like to be affiliated with, that we'd like to join, that have already reached out to us about coming on board. So I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, sort of the direction that we're able to take it.
There was the Brooklyn LA Bars and Restaurants Association, and you heard of it. And their thing was to develop relationships with the community board and local precinct. And is that also a part of your goal, to get involved with the community as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, I think the goal is to have a group of professional operators that have a positive reputation for the neighborhood, so that we can have an influence on the community board, that we can be more of a voice amongst that community. And, you know, if it's, you know, in an ideal world, it gets to a point where maybe one of us doesn't have a liquor license per se, or they need help getting a sidewalk cafe or whatever it might be, and we all show up to the meeting and say, hey, look, this is not a shot in a beer place. They're a reputable force to, in the neighborhood. They're a benefit to the neighborhood. For a long time, and Niles and I have both dealt with it, you know, it took us 14 months to get a liquor license. I think it took them almost 2 years to get a liquor license. And we are, you know, we'd like to think that by no means are we a detriment to the neighborhood. In fact, we're there to promote better business and to attract people to it. And I think for a long time, this community board the political force behind it has been sort of anti-establishment and hospitality establishment in that regard, trying to maintain the structure of the neighborhood as a residential neighborhood. And that's great. I mean, we want to have residents there that feel comfortable, but I think we provide something awesome to the neighborhood, which is hospitality, which is awesome food, which is amazing cocktails and great beer and wine that people can come and enjoy, and not those places that are $6 or $4 for a shot and a can of PBR. And those are all well and good. Everybody loves a good dive bar, but that's not what we're there to accomplish.
And sometimes it's hard to convey that to the community board. You're like, no, we are actually an establishment that's looking to serve the neighborhood Monday through Sunday, not just the party goers on the weekends, right?
Yes, and, you know, it's not just our community board. Many community boards, you know, in the issues that they see in their neighborhoods where they feel that, you know, bars are creating a detriment, where it's very noisy at night, where people are spilling onto the street, and, you know, they've sort of taken this blanket approach of just, you know, all bars and restaurants are bad. And we need to change that way of thinking. And it's really, really, really hard to do that as an individual standing in front of the community board to enact change alone. And they're, you know, it's like Yelp. It's like everyone, so many people that show up at the community board or write a review tend to come at it because they had a negative experience. And if you love your neighborhood and you love the restaurants in your neighborhood and you have such a great experience with the owners, you usually don't show up to the community board. You know, I mean, there tends to be more of the negative aspect of it. And so what we want to do is have a group of like-minded individuals who are good operators, who have a good history, who can come together as a group that has some strength and power behind it and say, you know, we're a part of the neighborhood too. We're a part of this community. We are a positive part of this community, and our voice does matter. And so I think that is definitely a very important aspect of one aspect of the collective.
And I think that you can also expand on that, not just with, you know, political institutions like the community board, but the greater New York City population and what they think about the neighborhood. Because what we've talked about a lot in a group is that the association, you know, if you just play free association with the East Village, it's like going out, you know, shot in a beer, dive bar, and that's cool. I mean, that heritage is and tradition is fun. I mean, I go to Blue and Gold more than every next guy, and we're friends with the owners there, and that's such an amazing little dive bar. But we want to stand for something that's, okay, the East Village is actually about ambitious dining. It's about providing people with culinary experiences. I mean, if you go through the list of restaurants that we have on board right now and bars, you know, we've got tin seafood and the Maiden Lane. We've got Spanish food in Huertas. We have Gigi's in pizza, Narita Hawaiian food, Virginia's New American, and a bomb burger. The Eddie, which is just like sort of a worldly cuisine and amazing cocktail program. And then Pouring Ribbons, which is like one of the most esteemed cocktail bars in the nation. And all of these guys are coming together to do something greater than is what their restaurant is all about. And we're out there to sort of benefit each other in that regard, and not, you know, we're trying to figure out ways, like, how do we make sure that everything that we do benefits the whole group and that we're in it as a collective instead of, oh, well, we did this event at Huertas or at Maiden Lane and they got to benefit from that. But how does that project a greater good for the community?
Are you guys worried at all? I'll just tell you, like, my worst fear for you guys about creating, like, a division within the restaurants and bars in the East Village and there being some sort of backlash because people who are not in the collective might feel like it's an us versus them. You know, like, kids at school when they're not in, like, the clique.
Of course.
And they're like, the clique sucks.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we can come off as pretentious. We can come off as, you know, saying we're better than others or certain people can't be in the club, of course. I mean, that's definitely a worry that we've had as well. It's come up in almost every conversation.
Have you felt any, like, has anything happened? Like, have people in the neighborhood commented in any way yet?
No. I mean, we're still very young, so that I'm sure will come along with this. And I mean, there's always going to be people that disagree with what we're doing. There's always going to be people at the community board who speak out against us because we sell alcohol. There's always going to be detractors. But I think ultimately, you know, there are similarities between the businesses that are involved in this. And one of those big similarities is that we all want to see the East Village be a better place and a more positive place. And we're definitely not for everyone having a liquor license, for instance. I mean, there are many bars that are trying to open or have opened that we would never support that as an entity having a liquor license. They either have a history of tons of violations or a history of bad operation or a history with the police in regards to underage drinking. I mean, we're not pro any of those things. But I think... Yeah, so, I mean...
Yeah, I guess the answer to the question would be that we are going to sort of define what the process is of coming on board into this collective, but it's not something that we want to be exclusive. Even if there are restaurants that are not defined by it, I think that the greater goal is to increase the value of the community as a dining community. And I think as it grows, you're not going to have necessarily people that are like, oh, that restaurant is in the collective and that one isn't. It's more just like we have like a lobbying power in that regard. It's not like, you know, when a group with interest goes to the government and they say, you know, we define this interest, like everybody that agrees or disagrees with that interest is somehow involved with that issue, but they're not a part of the lobby. Like that may not be the best example, but if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. But not everyone can be in the collective.
Yeah.
Because then the definition just gets too murky.
But not everyone has the same values either.
I can see it getting political, because if you want to have a good relationship with the cops and the firefighter, you know, the local firehouse, and you really, you know, want to forge those relationships and, you know, have them on your side, you can't have, you know, some big offenders in your in your collective.
But there's also something to say for, like, the places that have been there much longer than you.
Of course.
I mean, it's a tricky thing. Oh,
but what if they did? I mean, what if they were good businesses who wanted to join your collective? And
then they're definitely
welcome.
You know, welcome.
This isn't about...
They don't have to be 3 years old, right?
Right. I mean, exactly. You know, right now, the reason that there's 7 of us is because the 7 of us all know each other as owners. Mm-hmm. And we recognize each other and we're at each other's places. But we're also at a lot of other places in the neighborhood. This is just the beginning.
Sure.
The first. So restaurants that have been in the neighborhood for 30 or 40 years are most definitely welcome in the collective. I mean, they also share a lot of the similar values that we do,
yeah,
and want to see similar things in the neighborhood happen.
What can you be specific about what those things, like, you talked a little bit about, like, a collective vision. You sort of inferred, like, the future of the East Village, kind of maybe, like, raising the bar of hospitality. Like, can you speak to what an ideal outcome of the sure. collective could be?
So I think what really the goal is to keep our constituents, like, our neighbors, happy with the business that restaurants are doing there, so much so that they're going back home to their neighborhood to eat at, to dine in, instead of going to the West Village or jumping in a cab and going downtown or uptown.
Does it feel like that's the case right now?
That's probably one of the most difficult things that we struggle with, is that, you know, Niles and I talked on a couple of days ago, and that's one of the biggest concerns, is like both of our restaurants, bars, have a good amount of regulars, but I feel like you can only have so many regulars in the East Village. Mm. Because it's sort of a transient population that leaves to go to work, and then maybe they'll go out to dinner in that neighborhood, and then they'll come back home. Maybe they'll have a drink before they go to sleep. But you don't have a lot of people from the neighborhood walking around the neighborhood. It's not as picturesque as some of the other neighborhoods in New York City, in some good ways. I mean, it's got grit. It's got culture. But, you know, one neighborhood that we sort of, like, we think about and we talk about is the West Village. And how amazing that group of restaurants is in that community, and how people go out to eat in that neighborhood, like, you know, residents 3, 4, or 5 nights a week, and it is much easier to cultivate that following. So I guess the goal would be to sort of keep people in the neighborhood and also define a larger sort of image of the neighborhood, so that destination diners are coming in. And maybe we attract them in by doing events, by giving out some industry cards that will allow them to get discounts at all of our restaurants, maybe by doing a toy drive for charity to benefit a community center in the neighborhood, by doing classes, by doing field trips for all of our collective restaurants, but to just be a part of something that's more than one individual restaurant gives us an ability to affect change in greater numbers.
I have a question. How do you loan someone a line cook?
I think I said loan a piece of equipment and help with a line cook.
Someone said cook.
I did, but finding, I mean, well, for instance, just a few days ago, yeah, someone walked into Huertas and was looking for a job as a porter, and they don't need anyone, but they sent, you know, the chef over there sent out an email to everyone and said, just had a porter come in, here's his number, and immediately someone was like, I need one, and called him. And that's such a valuable, you know, thing. And then again, you know, I mentioned the appliance, and that's, you know, over at Virginia's, they need a tabletop fryer for an event they're doing and don't want to buy one, but need one. And so they're going to borrow one from Huertas for the event.
It's, you know, like the restaurant version of, like, neighbors going for a cup of sugar upstairs.
It's great to have that support.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No, it is. I mean, I can't tell you. I mean, when I worked at USHG, for Danny Meyer, I worked at Blue Smoke Battery Park City, and North End Grill opened at the same time, and we were neighbors, and literally we shared a back alley, our entrance together. And it's like, oh, we ran out of X spirit, or we need to borrow some lemons because our shipment didn't come in. You know, like, valuable that was, Seafold towels, printer paper, whatever it might be. And, you know, you almost felt bad about it, like, and then you realized you both needed the same things, and people screw up and the orders don't come in. And it's great to just be able to go next door and grab a bunch of paper bags because your shipment didn't come in and you need to do some to-go orders. You know, I think another success story already has been, we have a regular at Huertas who needed a job as a server, and he's got great experience. And he's like, I live in the neighborhood. I would love to work at one of the Eastville collective restaurants because that's the sort of place I want to work at. And I sent it out to the group, and he got a job at Virginia's. So it's like, that's really cool. We're already having an effect on just day-to-day operations and being able to share things that were unshareable previously, or much more difficult to share. 'Cause it's like, hey, Reed, I need some help. And then it's like, does he get back to you? Does he not? Now we have seven restaurants that are all sort of teaming up towards helping one another out, and hopefully more than that in the near future.
Do you think that other restaurants in the East Village who aren't in the collective are going to potentially change to be in the collective? I mean, do you see you guys yourselves as like setting a bar that other people could potentially rise up to?
I don't know that I would say we want others to emulate us necessarily.
There is like a greater goal, you know, for the whole neighborhood in terms of like this sort of like vision that you've outlined of what the East Village could be.
Sure.
I think in other neighborhoods, the people have defined it just through the caliber of restaurants that have gone into them, right? And that's sort of what that is what has happened in the last 5 years, right? That's why this got formed in the first place, was, wow, like, in the last 5 years, these seven restaurants have popped up, restaurants and bars. They weren't there before. Hopefully that's the start of something bigger. And this is just a way to sort of expedite the definition or shaping of what that neighborhood becomes.
But I could see it being twofold. Like, you set the standard for new restaurants that could potentially come in, but also could very well inspire restaurants that don't emulate you at this point to maybe improve their hospitality or their kitchens or whatever it is.
Sure.
To be more aligned with your values.
I can see that going on a case-by-case basis, depending on who the owner is.
Yeah, we don't want to, like,
yeah, I mean, I think
change who people are.
Yeah, I mean,
exactly. You don't want to be preachy to the other businesses in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I think
that's not being a good neighbor.
Yeah. I think it would be a really cool win, though, in the trajectory of the group, is if there is an operator that's trying to come into the East Village and they just reach out to the collective and they're like, hey guys, you have been operating in this neighborhood. We'd love to get some information about how things have been going and what we could see in terms of potential there. And we'd love to be involved with the collective too. And I think that would be a huge win. I mean, just as operators I know that have sought out other potential opportunities, you need full knowledge of how a neighborhood works, because New York City, you know, some neighborhoods are bigger than entire cities in the country, and they have such disparate, different populations and demographics. And it's important to know, like, to get on the phone with somebody and say, hey, like, please, like, go through what First Avenue is like. You know, that's such a big help, and it's free talk, and we're happy to provide that sort of resource to anybody that's looking to come into the neighborhood or that's already operating in it.
Yeah.
Because finding that out for yourself is a lot of legwork.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we were opening Maiden Lane. I feel that we didn't really have any resources of people to turn to in the neighborhood. We definitely had friends who owned restaurants and, you know, people who were sort of mentors to us, who we worked for, who are all great sources of valuable information. But most of those people don't operate in the East Village.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think what Nate is saying about that is would have been tremendously helpful to us at that time, and to be able to sort of have that now for new operators, I think would be tremendous.
I have one more. Can I ask one more question? Is this good for the? I want to know. Will this translate to the customer? What if someone comes in the Huertas and it's an hour plus wait, and you can say, but hold on. Let me call someone else in this collective and see what their wait is. Maybe you can walk over there. If their wait's like 30 minutes, you can walk over there and sit down quicker.
Yeah, I mean, that's an awesome thing if we can make that happen. I mean, anytime you work for a restaurant group, that's the MO, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we don't have a table, but, you know, Maialino has one. They have kick-ass Roman food, you know, and the hospitality we know is going to be on par. And I think that is sort of like, that's a great question, because that's the key of what defines this group. It's like, I can call up any seven of the restaurants and be like, hey, I've got some regular guests. They're looking to dine out somewhere else tonight. How does Narita sound for some poke and authentic Hawaiian food? and you start talking up the other neighbors in the collective, and you're like, that's the place you should go around here for that style of cuisine or just a different experience, but you're going to get the same hospitality. And I think that's why we need to trust each other, that it is a defined group of people, that it's not going to be like, well, I'm calling up this guy in the collective and, you know, they're awesome, but I hope they treat you right. You know, it's got to be known that that's going to be a baseline.
And that they're consistent, and that you can send anybody there at any day of the week, any time, and it will always be as great as it has ever been.
Right. And I think that's sort of where the definition of what some of these values are that we're talking about. It's not just, you know, are they, you know, it's focused on sourcing, for instance. Like, if you enjoy eating the vegetables or the tinned seafood at Maiden Lane, there's a reason that we are particular on how we source. And so are they over at Huertas? You know, a lot of us in the collective either buy from the farmer's market or we buy, you know, through a purveyor that provides seasonal local foods. And so that's a value that is key to all of us. You know, we all, well, I mean, these are conversations that we're having, but like a lot of conversations coming up recently have been about labor and pay and tips and all that. Like, all of us are actively paying our employees or trying to figure out new ways to pay livable wages for our employees. That's a value that we all care about. We wouldn't want an operator part of our collective who in that conversation is like, nope, I pay him minimum wage and, you know, and I skim off some of the tips. Like, we, you know, those are some real values that are right now with the seven of us are something that all seven of us feel very strongly about. And those have been conversations that we're having. Yeah. So I think that is when we look at a restaurant, you know, I can say, I love going there. You know, I don't go there because I, you know where they're getting the ground meat for that taco for, but like, I love going there, but like that might not be someone that's a part of the collective because there's not similar values, you know?
Yeah, that was actually my question. Now that Huertas has abolished tipping, is that something that's obviously not like mandated for the rest of the restaurants, but since you guys are kind of committed to sharing similar values, that's an idea that's being circulated.
Yeah, I mean, in the first meeting, it was a really cool kickoff meeting where we were just trying to figure out what this means and who we are and everything. And the first question I asked was, why don't we just go around the table and talk about things that we're interested in learning from one another? Or that are concerns about operating in this neighborhood. And one of the things that came up was hospitality included or going to a gratuity-free future. And, you know, I can act as a resource on that specific topic for any of the restaurant tours that are in the group. And I'd love to see more of them go in that direction, but it's certainly not mandatory. Everybody's got to operate within their own cost structures. I think the goal is really for all of us to stay open and to be healthy. So whatever that takes, let's get there. And then we can figure out what a future means without tipping and be a part of that.
Awesome. Are there any upcoming events?
We are discussing and working on a outdoor end of summer block party.
Cool.
Tompkins Square Park, hopefully.
Tompkins Square Park. Well, that's exciting. What is the best way to kind of like follow your progress or learn more about you guys?
So we have set up an Instagram. It's at Eastville Collective. We're posting on there every once in a while. We do have a Facebook page by the same name. And I think just if, you know, we're talking about setting up an email address if anybody wants to get in touch. But I think for now, you know, reach out to any of the operators in the collective and we'll be sure to write back about that specific topic.
Is there going to be a Twitter in the future, perhaps?
I'm sure that
a Twitter
is an easy thing to do.
The Snapchat these days is killing me. Man.
I'm not going to do it. I'm sorry.
Me neither. I'm so not about it. But I think that what's been probably the most fulfilling part of it so far has been that people have reached out about wanting to be in it, to be involved. And we're even thinking about people that maybe we should have invited on the onset. We just want to see it grow organically. We don't know exactly where it's going to go, what it's going to become. But we're trying to, you know, we have a meeting tomorrow and we're trying to shape a mission statement for the group so that when we go on the radio and talk to the press and talk, more importantly, talk to the constituents in the neighborhood, talk to our guests. Hey, guys, like, we're a part of the Eastville Collective, and this is what it means. Maybe a sticker on the window, maybe a business card at every location. But just have that logo, have that feel sort of out there and in the mind's eye of the public is really the goal for now. Do some kick-ass events, provide some people with some awesome hospitality and great food and beverages, and we'll see where it takes us.
Is there going to be like a hazing process, like every time someone else comes on?
Well, yeah, now that we're already in and didn't have to go through that, we'll definitely be,
make them, like, streak around the neighborhood or something. Like,
I think,
chug a keg.
I think basically they just have to beat the dude that plays chess, like, in Alphabet City.
Like, oh, I like that.
One of the dudes that plays chess, because I don't think they're easily beatable.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks, you guys. This is really cool to hear about. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the morning after quiz.
Welcome back to the morning after. Guys, are you ready for the morning after quiz?
Yeah.
Ready. Hashtag least important quiz of your life.
Hashtag plan B.
All right. So you guys have the Eastville Cooperative. No, it's a collective. I'm sorry. I already screwed that up.
We were really specific about naming it, so I'd appreciate it if you...
I respect that, and I respect you.
You can eat pizza during the quiz,
just
by the
eat
way.
The pizza. Everything will be better when you have pizza in your mouth. So,
brain food.
You guys are in the East Village. Well, I'm going to ask you about East Village history.
Whoa.
Yay.
Whoa.
But the fun history, not that boring, like, Dutch farmland history. Sorry, everyone who's Dutch.
Hate mail immediately.
Oh, my God. They're going to come out of the woodwork. So... according to curb.com, oh, I'm sorry, it's a multiple choice quiz.
Nice.
Easy. You don't have to just come up with an answer.
Three questions.
I told somebody a story yesterday about how I got a 63 on my third grade reading comprehension multiple choice test, so I don't know if I'm going to be okay with this.
Oh, really?
So that's the number to beat, 63%.
Yeah,
okay,
okay,
we'll
that's
see how
easy.
Maybe not.
According to curb.com, in 1968... St. Mark's Place was so popular that tour buses changed their routes from McDougal Street in the West Village to St. Mark's. The tourists were snapping pictures of every long-haired, bead-wearing hippie-like animals at the zoo. Fed up with this, artist Joey Skaggs decided to A. fill the street with people willing to walk around completely naked and go about their business, some engaging activities out in the open that are normally left for more private quarters, B, turned the tables on them, and on September 22nd, hired a bus and a tour guide and took 60 hippies on a guided tour of residential Queens so that they could laugh and point and take photos of the squares, quote, mowing their lawns and washing their cars. Or C, in the hottest, on the hottest day in August, hijacked one of those buses and dropped off all those tourists in the middle of the Bronx, left them there. What did Joey Skaggs do in response to tour buses treating them like animals at the zoo?
See,
I wish that
happened.
I would
have gone with
B.
Oh, it was me.
All right. We're against each other, right? We're not on the same team.
Yeah, so you're winning.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
wait,
that's
what's
great.
B again?
B was he turned the tables and he took a bunch of hippies on a Greyhound bus through Queens so that they could like laugh and point at all the squares mowing their lawns and washing their cars.
Oh, that's funny. I want to do that in Bushwick for like the people who go on the street art tours. Did you guys see them when you came in?
No. I tried doing that, and my boyfriend's like, "Don't be mean."
Aw, no fun.
I know.
You're too nice, Clay.
I know, he's super nice. How did a Newsweek article from 1965 describe getting to the East Village? This is 1965. A, head east from Greenwich Village, and when it starts to look squalid around the Bowery and 3rd Avenue, you know you're there. B, follow the smell, and when you think your nose can't take the odor any longer, you're in the right place. C, ask the bus driver to drop you off where you're most likely to get mugged.
Oh.
One of these was actually printed in Newsweek.
Wow.
Wow.
A.
I go with C.
It's A.
Yeah.
All right, you guys are next.
Can you repeat A again?
A is head east from Greenwich Village, and when it starts to look squalid around Bowery and 3rd Avenue, you know you're there.
Okay, so they're tied.
You're tied.
Okay, for the win.
So speaking of the Bowery, let's fast forward a bit. So when remembering the heyday of CBGB and its colorful performers, Marky Ramone, drummer of the Ramones, said of Wayne County, a transvestite performer and regular fixture on the CBGB stage, A, she had a lot of balls. B, her tits were better than my sister's.
Ugh.
Or C, she was equally comfortable covered in glitter or some dude's blood.
I'm going to go with A.
C.
A. You win?
Oh, woo! Niles for the win. But Nate, I think you did better than 63%. Because 1 out of 3
is not better.
Is not 63. No.
Two out of three would have been, yeah.
So you did get 2 out of...
No, I didn't.
No, you got 1. Oh, sorry about that.
You can't win them all.
I guess I'll have to sit next to Miss Metzger for the rest of the year.
Oh. Well, you get pizza. You both get pizza.
There's pizza for your face.
Yeah, everybody wins on the morning after. Niles, Nate, thank you so much for coming on. We are very excited to hear about Eastville Restaurant Collective, and we look forward to following you guys and seeing where it goes.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Spread the good word.
Spread the good word. See you later.
Toodles.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.